Hello and welcome to the Rengineering YouTube and podcast. I'm Paul, your host. This podcast is all about Porsche and their cars and the people and the technology and the engineering that goes behind it. You'll find your Porsche stories, which is us, me, talking to you about your Porsche, your journeys and your life experiences with those cars. Tech Talk, which is all about the technical aspects of Porsche. Waffle, which is just me whittering on about basically anything with some friends. And Heritage, which looks at the entire journey of Porsche from the earliest days to the present day. If that sounds interesting to you, then stick around. Welcome back to the Rengineering YouTube and podcast, and welcome to episode 38 of the podcast. This week's episode is a waffle episode. It's a bit of a shorter one, and I will explain why in a minute. But firstly, I hope you're all right. I hope you're doing well, and I hope your week is been shaping up nicely, and you've got good things to look to towards the weekend. I am off to Silverstone this weekend, partly to shoot a bit of an episode on using your car on track with Barnsport and Scotty from Barnsport, who's been on the channel a couple of times now, both in terms of my Outlaw Cayman and also the first ever Tech Talk. Actually, you can go and watch and listen to on any podcast streaming service, but also at Rengineering on YouTube, and you can go and see that now, which is all about geometry. Let's get into the episode then, because it is one sweet, beautiful episode. So the first thing to talk about this week is Caffeine and Machine. Mentioned it last week, and that is that their third actual event location is now open, and that was the Hut, or is the Hut, and that's in the West Meon area of Hampshire, which is a beautiful area. I mean, if you're in the UK, it doesn't necessarily mean you'll know this particular area, albeit if you're not in the UK, the UK is a England anyway, is a particularly small place, and if you're in the States, it will fit neatly into a corner of a state. And if you're in, I don't know, the UAE or something like that, then, you know, it will fit into a very small corner. So, yeah. But the West Meon area is one of those areas that has lots of driving roads, lots of beautifully, not particularly smooth tarmac, but yeah, it goes through loads of sort of covered areas, and it dips in. You'll go through a small kind of village, and it will, you know, you'll slow right down for the village, obviously, you know, don't be a dick as far as Caffeine Machine are concerned. But yeah, then you'll sort of lift back out again, and you go into like long, fast sweepers that are sort of 50, 60 mile per hour. And you can sort of sit in second and third gear, kind of knocking it into those corners. And then, yeah, you get a beautiful flow going. That's my type of driving, that kind of flow driving where you're just kind of dipping into one corner and out of another. And yeah, that stuff, I love it. Absolutely love it. Which is why, if I think back to last year's road trip, which was into the south of France and in the French Alps, my favourite part was Route Napoleon. And it was tons of that, kind of those long sweepers. And yeah, you just go over a crest and you dip into something. It's that stuff. There's loads of that around here. So they picked a great area to put a location. The West Meon Hut has been a pub. Interestingly, one thing I will share is some sound bites from the day of the opening day. I managed to catch up with the guy that used to run the West Meon Hut before it turned into Caffeine and Machine. So I'll insert a bit of that, you know, us talking about, you know, his perspective, because he was still there on opening day, but in a different guise, obviously, because it's now operated and run by Phil McGovern and the Caffeine and Machine team. But that guy had been involved in the company for a long time. So I was really intrigued to know how he felt, not just about it's a good brand to have, but also if you've been involved in somewhere like that for decades, what it means to see it reopen and kind of attract petrol heads again, or gear heads if you're elsewhere in the world. Really cool though, really liked it. As you'd imagine, that I think it was quite small scale in terms of an opening. They didn't kind of floodgates open. So the amount of tickets that were available for the day were quite limited, I would say. I nabbed one early. But then they also do themed events at different points in the month. And they had a Strassenkultur event Wednesday this week, which sold out immediately. So gives you an idea of the sort of the pull for this stuff in the south of the UK, south of England. Massive. absolutely massive and really loved it. I think they've got a little bit to go to create that same vibe and the same kind of The Hill, which is the original version of Caffeine and Machine. It's that there's, I Google it. If you haven't seen it before, it's definitely worth a Google. If you're in the UK and in England at all, or even if you're in Scotland, Ireland or Wales, then yeah, definitely, you know, make your way across and head to The Hill, because it's the original, it's the OG. And it's a great venue. But when that started, it wasn't as neat and tidy and pretty as it is now, right? It's a really attractive place to go. They've got loads of great seating in different locations, places to park your car to get those iconic shots. There's a, if you can get lucky enough and you time it right, you can park right outside the front of the building, and there's this massive mural on the wall that's got a Michelin guy on it. It's really cool. But it didn't start like that, you know. Some of those murals took a little bit of time to develop and paint, and but then if you think about scaling a business, the last thing you're going to do without really understanding whether the business is going to work and it's going to generate enough revenue to sustain itself is put a shit ton of investment in. So I get why they've kind of launched with a brand and it feels like a Caffeine and Machine place, but I can imagine in the next 2 or 3 years they'll kind of do more, you know, paint murals up and really create that space that feels extra special like The Hill does. But a couple of people reached out and, you know, said hello to me, Phil's other half, Laura, also works for Tut Hill. So I've been talking to Laura. I didn't know this at the time, by the way. I was talking to Laura on and off about my visit to Tut Hill, which is coming up, which I'm really excited about. And then only find out that she's actually Phil's other half later down the line. So, but really, really great vibe. Really looking forward to it. And I kind of mentioned to Phil, didn't want to interrupt. I'm not very good at interrupting people. I'm far too polite for my own good. So I did see Phil on the day. I didn't want to go just wandering over and interrupt him mid-conversation with somebody else. But I have said to, I'd love to have him on the podcast and have a proper sit-down chat, particularly on mental health. And actually, it's a kind of cross-pollination from, I think, I'm trying to think of who it was now. There's another podcast anyway, and I'm not saying who it is because I'm trying to be careful about sharing. I don't care at all. There's loads of great podcasts. Sam Moores, that's who it was. And I'm pretty sure he was on the Sam Moores podcast and Car Chat, and they had a pretty deep and meaningful around well-being and mental health and car culture. And I kind of want to pick up more of that thread. I'm really interested around that stuff. I've seen more compassion and empathy people in the car culture now. You get pockets of dickheads, but generally people are really nice to each other. So, and I think that's part of the CNM brand as well, is that kind of, it should be an inclusive space, right? It should be that, you know, and I've said there's loads of engineering. This isn't an elitist podcast or an elitist channel where if you've got your brand new 992 GT3 RS, that makes you better than somebody with a 924. It doesn't at all. And I love the fact that Caffeine and Machine stand for that as well. I actually said to Phil, I bet that my up on, you know, slammed on the deck with Porsche twists would get more love than my Cayman. I'm pretty sure it would, right? So, yeah. So out of 10, I'd give it an 8 out of 10. There's still definitely a few bits to go. It'd be really nice to see it sort of all manicured and kind of, titivated towards the summertime. But it's not fully spring yet, is it? So you've got to give them credit where credit's due. So I'm with Michael, who actually used to run and manager of the West Meon Hut, now Caffeine and Machine, the Hut. You were just telling me about the fact that this place used to have a Piston Heads, pretty yep. healthy.
Yeah, on Tuesday nights during the summer, 100 to 150 cars, barbecue. It's always been a landmark pub for car meets.
Classic. Love it. So when did that fade away at all, or what happened?
Yeah, it faded away about 12 years-ish ago, right, when Marsden's decided to change the pub to a managed to a leased and tenanted pub, okay, and then it's just sort of dwindled down.
That's a shame. That is a real shame. So what, and then after that, has there been anything anywhere local that you know of that kind of picked that thread up, or was it?
The Flower Pots used to take a few of the members down there. It's not as big, but they don't go there very often. The Piston Head Pub Club in this area has got 515 members.
Wow, so you are expecting this place to be popular then? I mean, it's going to be popular by the fact that it's a caffeine and machine branded place, right? It's naturally going to have a decent following for that. But I think this is what this is opening day, and it's been sold out, right? So
yeah, sold out in just over an hour, I believe, and that. So that was 20 tickets per hour for 10 hours.
And that's madness, isn't it? Like, it's yeah. It really, to me, that really shows this sort of south of the country was aching for something, some identity that you could. And I think Phil's nailed it in the branding, that it doesn't feel suitable. I mean, we've just seen an Aston Martin go past and you know, various other bits and pieces, but actually it's as cool to see some of the old retro stuff. We've got an old classic Alfa in the corner. That's what it's about, right? It's all of it.
Absolutely. The GT40 just along here, the guy Mark who owns it, he used to bring the GT40 club here 12 years ago, and he's now bringing them back, so we're coming back. So yeah, it's just really great. It's what this area has been crying out for a long time.
Are you I guess got a bit of an emotional connection to this place after being here for so long? Is it, I mean, sort of standing out and kind of directing people and encouraging people to park in the right places and not act like a dick. But for you, is it this exciting and emotional to be at, or what, how do you feel now?
Yeah, when I first walked back in the place in December, it hadn't changed inside, and it was just like, oh, and as Phil's logo, feels like home. Yeah, to me, it's just, I walked straight in here, I knew everything was, and I knew how things worked, and to me, it just made sense. It's made my job a lot easier.
I bet it has. Okay, well, I'm going to go and have a look around. Thanks so much.
Enjoy.
And I'm sure I'll see you. I'll be here all the time because I, yeah. Good. Take it easy. See you later. Take care.
Hey, I hope you're really enjoying this episode. And if you are enjoying this episode, I have a very small request to make. I'm really trying to grow the YouTube channel at the moment, and whilst it's always nice when people naturally gravitate towards it and subscribe and like and share, I'm going to actually ask you, if you're enjoying this episode and you've enjoyed the Rengineering podcast so far, to head over to YouTube and subscribe. And yeah, let me know what you think of any of those episodes and if there's anything you'd like to see in the future. But for now, I'll head back to the episode, but just that small request. Thanks. Take care.
On the Cayman, though, I managed to get stuck back into doing some modifications. The car, in less than 6 weeks, goes to Dave the Trimmer. Dave the Trimmer is a... Well, his name's Dave, obviously, and he's a trimmer. But a great sort of Porsche specialist in trimming services. There's loads of people out there that do a really good job. Originally, way back when, I was going to work with D-Class Automotive. D-Class is still brilliant. You know, there's no criticism of D-Class at all. They're really far away. I'd have to leave the car with them for, I think it was 3 weeks in total. It just, like, it was really complex to get the car over to them and get it back. And then when we're talking about the Ren 550, again, it's logistically quite difficult to manage that. So Dave and I picked up the conversation. He's really keen on being, you know, about a collaborator and partner in the Ren 550 project. Again, we'll come to that in a sec. So yeah, that's where it's going. But in service of that kind of next phase of fixing up the Cayman and getting it really towards the end of its sort of, I guess, modification. No one's got a finished project car, right? I was going to say finished. That would have been a complete lie. But to the point where I can feel like I can leave it, because visually it's complete. The interior is the kind of last thing in the queue. Aside from brakes. Brakes are the last thing. But yeah, the last big thing to spend loads of money on is the interior. So, but I needed and wanted to change the steering wheel from its original 981 generation, and actually a 987 generation, because it went across the two eras of Porsche sport design steering wheel, which ran all the way through. You could select it as an option, but also it came standard on like the GT3 of that era and things like that. So really cool steering wheel, but felt slightly aged, and I think it sits better and suits better in the 997 generation. So I looked at all the steering wheels that came from the 718, so 2017 Porsche and 901, all the way through to the modern day, and not quite to the modern day, because the 992's got a different style of steering wheel, but right up until the 992. So there's a decent amount of time. I think it's probably like 7 or 8 years worth of different generations and slight different changes of model. And when I was looking into it, all those parts are interchangeable. So I looked at my favorite version of all, if I could kind of cherry, same as the rest of the car really, cherry pick all of my favorite bits and put them into one, that's what I did. So I found a 991.2 GT Sport steering wheel, which is slightly smaller than the one I've got, which looks broadly the same as a GT4 steering wheel from a 981. But also it's got mode select on the steering wheel center. I'm not a big fan of having buttons all over the steering wheel, but I do find myself switching modes quite a bit. So having that option, and obviously when I had my 911 Carrera T, I'd had that in the Carrera T, and it's one of the things I really loved. So I worked with a GPS adapter in the sort of based half out of the US and half out of China, I think. They seem to have a US domain name, but it definitely comes from China. But I reached out to Paul, the guy that owns GPS adapter, and said, look, these are the things I want to do. Can we do something together? And he said, yeah, absolutely, no problem at all. So definitely did me some friendly rates in terms of buying the parts. I still paid, but I've definitely got a friendly rate, which is cool. Fitted the equipment. And that is his Adapter X, it's called. And that allows you to use that mode select jog wheel on the steering wheel with the original sort of keypad, touchpad that sits to your kind of, if you're in the UK and you're driving, you've got a right-hand drive car, it's on your left hand, effectively where your armrest is. And you can just flick it in between the different modes on the steering wheel. It's wicked. And it works straight away, straight out of the box. So yeah, that was complete. That's now on. I've had a little bit of a problem with the SRS or airbag light. It's still illuminated, basically. The airbag itself I brought from Poland. Sold as brand new. Haven't got no affiliation with the seller, although the seller's been really receptive. Went back and said, I've checked all the wiring. There was no fault before, so I know it's not the seatbelt pretensioners or any other airbag in the car. It has to be the steering wheel airbag. Can you send another one out? And I was sort of gritting my teeth a little bit because I bought it off eBay, albeit a good seller with great, 100% feedback and all that stuff. And I'll explain why. Actually, an airbag to buy from Porsche out of the box is about £1,500. And I managed to get it for about a fifth of that on eBay. So you do know when you should anyway, go in with your eyes open, that if you buy something that's not directly from the manufacturer, there's a chance it might not be correct or work or incompatible, whatever else, if there's loads of compatibility issues. I've done my research and I do know that those same airbag modules, you can basically move, again, they're the same steering wheel across Macans, Cayennes, 911s, Caymans, Boxsters, the lot. So I knew you can move them around. And I kind of, like I said, I went back to the seller and said, not totally convinced that this is working. This is a good, good part and it's serviceable. And to their credit, they said, absolutely fine. We'll dispatch another one to you. So top marks, that eBay seller. It hasn't arrived yet. And I'll obviously swap it out and test it again and see what happens. But it's supposed, the whole thing's supposed to be plug and play. So we'll wait and see. The Nürburgring trip is creeping up, so and the car's due an MOT in May. So, if you're not in the UK, an MOT is effectively a yearly check to make sure your car is roadworthy, and you get you don't get a certificate anymore, but it's checked and goes onto a database that the police can use if there's cars driving around, and they use a AMPR, or APNR, AMPNR, isn't it? And scan your car and tell you that you've, and then they can arrest you if you're driving around with the car without the right certification for it. So I've got that. And then the other thing that GPS adapter sent over is a, what I also wanted to do, I've got a fob for my Design 911 Valvetronics exhaust. And it's the switchable exhaust. So you've got valves in the exhaust, so you can turn it, you can make it loud or quiet. And with the Sport Plus modes, there's like loads of different options for how kind of leery or quiet you want your car. But I've always missed that, being able to hit a button on the you know, I was talking to you a minute ago about your armrest and the buttons that are all laid out for you in front of there. There's an exhaust button that sits on there, so you can switch it from that. I really wanted my entire car, that entire Cayman, to feel OEM plus, and whilst the Design 911 exhaust is great, it is still great, right? I've got no question about that. I never like having those fobs. They just rattle around the car. They're a faff to find and then use, so it tends to stay in loud mode all the time. But what I'd like to do, and what GPS adapter sells, is a kit that allows you to retrofit that button. Factory button looks exactly, it is exactly the same as the original one, and it interacts with the solenoid that sits in the engine compartment that switches, and it, you've got to code it into the car, but the car's going into Barnsport in a month for other bits and pieces to be done. So effectively, the idea is that I'll fit all that before it goes to Scotty. Scotty can work his magic with Piwiz, the Porsche data system that interacts with your car, and you can set different modes and models and settings and all that stuff in it. And that should allow me then to be able to just switch in and out of the exhaust, but using the button on the keyboard on the pad rather than actually fumbling around trying to find a transponder for it. So we're getting there with those things. That's got to be done, though. I haven't done that yet. It means taking a lot of the interior back out, and I just really hate doing that. It's never, you know, I've done it a couple of times now, and Porsche parts fit together beautifully. There's no question of that. You just, stuff comes apart and it goes back together again really easily. But every time you take something apart, there's a chance you'll break clips, or there's a chance that you'll introduce a rattle to the car, and those things really bug me. But I know I need to do it, and then once it's done, it's done. That's it. These modifications that I'm going through the process of installing, I'm not going to keep doing them, right? Like, once this is finished, it is finished. Of course, there's other things I'll do in the future, but hopefully won't mean taking the interior apart again. So that's what the Cayman's looked like over the last sort of month, 6 weeks, is getting towards the end of that interior updates phase. And there's way more in the interior than the exterior. If you want to watch some of these episodes, actually, you can do that right now. You can head over to YouTube, and there's a whole playlist on my car, effectively a part of the Ren Build series, and I talk to you all about why I sold my Cayman in the first place, buying the 911 Carrera T, why I sold the 911 Carrera T and then went back and bought my Cayman again, and then it started introducing the modifications and why I've started modifying it. So you can literally get the entire backstory. If you have a 981 of any kind of Boxster Cayman, all that's applicable. There's some stuff in there that's applicable to 911s as well. If you've got a 911, you're listening to this and you want to go and have a bit of a watch, they are quite well rated. People seem to enjoy that stuff, so that's really good. Particularly the one about why I sold my 911. That always seems to do really well. Even now, YouTube loves evergreen content, and that is definitely evergreen. So what else have we got? Let me just have a quick squiz. So it's probably worth picking up on. It's so annoying. One of the things I bought for my car, my Cayman, is a hood emblem, but the Heritage Edition hood emblem. So that came on the Sport Classic and the ST, which is literally brand new, like brand new. I've had that badge 7 or 8 months, and I was washing it the other day and noticed that it started to delaminate in one corner of it. Now, those hood emblems are not cheap. They're about 150 quid each. So I was kind of like, oh, well, that sucks. Took it into Porsche Portsmouth, who I would always say good things about, and then only for the warranty guys to come out, because I tried to get a warranty claim on it and get another one free of charge. Quite firmly, with no gaps for debate, it was a stone impact, and that's what's caused it to start delaminating. My instinct was to get all kind of ferrous and feral and shitty and start debating with it and saying, no. But there was a tiny little me, 26-year-old me, sat on my shoulder that said, you used to work as a warranty person for Lotus, and it's exactly what you would have said then. So I, tail between my legs, shut up and left. And yeah, so at some point, I've no doubt that I'll be driving around Europe and heading towards the Nürburgring, and then sort of a month's time, and then, you know, part of that badge will just fly off and I'll have to actually replace it. It does suck a bit because the original badge was, what, 8 years old, and it was perfect. You know, I took it off and looked brand new, and this one's lasted a matter of months before it's fallen apart. So there's definitely QC, you know, QC issues at Porsche, not just because a, you know, tiny little stone hit it and kind of broke the lacquer or whatever it is, the coating on it, and allowed water ingress. But I just, yeah, I mean, the badges should last longer than that. I'd be really interested to find out from anybody else, actually, if they've had similar issues with small, very insignificant problems, but irritating nonetheless. That's it, really, though, for my car. I guess it's probably worth picking up, and I've talked about this on and off over the, you know, the last five or six episodes, actually, the prices of cars in the UK has changed completely as well. When I was looking for my 911, I was looking at around this £75,000 mark for a car, for a Carrera T. And at the time, because it really was Carrera T or GT4, 981 GT4, for about the same price. Now, obviously, cars devalue, that goes without saying, right? You can't expect them to never, but Porsche retention figures are pretty amazing, you know, especially special ones. They don't tend to drop. And then, and I've mentioned a few times about Taycans being, you know, dropping like a stone. That's still true. We'll get onto that in a sec. But a birch green, so a PTS color, for those of you not completely familiar with it, PTS, exclusive manufacturer, Sonderwunsch, you know, these are all parts of Porsche over the years that allow you to customize and change things on the car before they, they're sold. Birch green is a very rare color, very, very rare. I think there's four or five in the UK. It's a kind of almost fluorescent, greeny, yellowy color. It's bright, right? So it's not for the faint of heart, for sure. But £62,000, and that car, I remember looking for one at the same time as my 911, bearing in mind that was only a year ago, and it would have been in the 80s. So that's like a 20 grand drop in a year. Shocking, really. And I was like, well, that's, you know, maybe some of that's market correction after COVID. Some of it's maybe down to the fact it's a polarizing color. Not everybody wants a fluorescent green, not GT4. But who knows? And then I'm on a WhatsApp group. Shout out to everybody on the WhatsApp group that I'm on. If you're listening, hello, good to chat to you. And interesting, this comment. I can't obviously mention names because I don't want to kind of put anybody in the shit for it. But the one of those people, their brother-in-law is a trader, and I had bid and got a relatively early, but still a Taycan with, in Storm, I think it was either in Stormtrooper spec, so white with launch wheels, like actually the spec I'd go for personally, £35,000 for a Taycan. I mean, that's a trade bid, right? So you get nothing with that. That is it. That's all you get. But I just could not believe that how figures have fallen off from the early days of, you know, launching that car. And it's still a really great car, right? It's not a criticism of Taycans at all. It's just the market's backwards. There's 780 of the bloody things on Auto Trader. I mean, it's just ludicrous. I don't know. And then they're at the same time launching new versions that lap the ring in 7 minutes, 7 seconds. So it just, none of it makes sense to me. But 35 grand for a Taycan's just ridiculous. The last thing I'm going to talk about before we wrap up today is really important, really exciting, and it's something that I've been working on. And I was teetering on the brink of putting this out there today, but I'm actually going to spend some more time over the weekend recording it. The first trailer, of the teaser trailer for the Ren 550, is out now on YouTube. So you can head over, and please do. Head over to YouTube and give it a watch. If you go into YouTube and you put Rengineering, RENGINEERING, it will come up with, did you mean re-engineering? All you got to do is just hit no, search for Rengineering, and it will come up. And I'll put a link in the description as well, so you can go find it there. But the, yeah, so the teaser trailer, one of the things that's been talked about a lot is, what is the Ren 550? What, you keep talking about it. What the hell do you mean? And this really paints the picture. It doesn't just paint a picture. The renders are up. The loads of panning shots around the car. You really get to start seeing what the vision is for this vehicle. And at the weekend, I'm going to sit down and do a watch back of the trailer itself, and then pause and then talk to you very specifically about what each part is, why it's like that, start introducing the collaboration and the partners for the build, and really start to turn it from kind of just something I'm talking about to actually a, you can see it and you'll get a much better feel for what I'm on about. It's a big project. It's a big engineering project. It's going to be treated like a project. The content's going to be mega in-depth, full-length episodes. It is not going to be for everybody. If you like your 15-minute episodes of YouTube channels, this definitely won't be for you, although I will do roundup episodes at some point. But the intent is to really show and demonstrate how hard it is to take something from a visual to a real-life car. I still don't think there's enough of that kind of content out there. So if you're really interested in design, you're really interested in engineering, definitely head over to that, to the channel, and have a watch. I will put the audio on next week. So next week's episode will be the breakdown of the car, be limited intro, and then we're going to get straight into it, because I really want you guys to sort of get a feel for what I'm trying to achieve. With that in mind, I'll sign off with one thing. Two things. If you want to be on Your Porsche Stories, you can still do that. info@reengineering.com, or head over to @reengineering UK on all other places, and drop me a DM and you can be on Your Porsche Stories. But the one thing I've been really shooting for a while, apart from having partners and collaborators with the build, is a prime sponsor. And that sponsor has been that meeting I had this week. And we made an agreement to go ahead. So the car and the build and the build series is going to be sponsored by X-Hype. X-Hype are a lubricants and fluids manufacturer. They are using lab-tested, high-performance fluids. And they're an exciting new player in the game. Part of what Reengineering stands for is working with brands that are just growing, people that are passionate about the industry, but they're technically sound as well. The meeting I had, I was so impressed with what they're trying to do, the credibility behind the brand and what they stand for, how they're even they're bringing to market, and what their approach is for that and who they're going to be working with is really fascinating. So you will hear lots more about X-Hype over the coming months, probably years actually, because this build is not going to be a quick one, nor should it be, because the quality has to be perfect. But you'll hear lots more about X-Hype. It does mean we're in a much better position now to start moving forward. Because they're a lubricants company, you can buy their products, their oils, and you'll get a discount through me. But also, by helping purchase some of those products, you will directly be contributing to the build itself. What my promise to you now, and will stand going forward as well, is any profit that comes through from X-Hype into Reengineering will only be used for the good of that project. None of it goes in my back pocket. The whole thing is designed to be self-sustaining. So, you know, whereas you see other YouTubers, you know, the income goes in their pocket and they make a living. I have a day job. I'm an engineer in my day job. I'm quite happy with that. So everything is going to be, all the money that comes in from monetizing on the platform, any part of this, whether it's social media, whether it's the YouTube channel, sponsorships for the podcast, anything like that, all that money goes into that project. So you're not feeding a fat cat, you're helping build a car. And on that note, thank you so much for listening. I really hope that you've had a great, fantastic week. If you are not feeling great, you're having a tough time of it, jump in your car, any car, go for a drive, shake it all out of your system, go speak to some friends and hang with some people, even if you're feeling like being alone. Look after yourselves, and I will see you next week. Take care for now. Bye-bye.